No one can tell your story like you can. Welcome to the Testament Podcast, which is a ministry of Canyon Creek Presbyterian Church, where we are on a mission to build relationships wherever we go. The Testament Podcast is a ministry of the discipleship team, and the goal for the podcast is simple: to reach out, to share a story, and to live life together. What we're interested in is not necessarily what's right or what's perfect, but what we're after is stories along the way. Sometimes our material will be serious, sometimes it'll be heavy, but most times it'll be somewhere in between. We're going to talk about all sorts of subjects dealing with life, money, music, food, anything you can think of. No stone will be left unturned. So we have a very special guest on the pod today. It is the Honorable Right Reverend Andy Odom. Andy, how you doing?
I'm doing well. You can take off those first two words.
Well,
used to describe.
Well, if you don't know this, Andy technically is my supervisor, so you know I have to be mindful of how I introduce him. I want him to feel really good during this pod. So, thank you for joining us. I just invite you to share just a little bit about who you are personally, professionally, spiritually. Just tell us who you are.
All right. So, I grew up in Dallas, and my wife and I have now been married. We just had our 21st anniversary.
Cool.
Got two kids, both in high school. One just got her driver's license. The other one is never going to get hers. If she has anything to say about it, we're actually pushing her to start learning. You know, I met my wife in seminary years ago, obviously, and it just went from there. Just a quick interesting thing about my wife and I's and my relationship. We found out after we met that we had crossed our youth groups in our churches growing up, actually did things together.
Wow.
When we were in high school, but we never did the same. We never went to the same thing, so we never had met. And yet she knew, I knew people from her church down in Bryan College Station, and she knew people from my church up here in Dallas. And so it was an interesting thing we discovered after we met. I'm the oldest of three. I have a younger brother and a younger sister living in Houston and Austin. And so my vocationally, when I told my mother that I think I was interested in and felt called to go to seminary, immediately within the next 24 hours, I got phone calls from both my brother and my sister thanking me because since I was doing that, they now wouldn't have to. And that was an expectation that I didn't actually know was there. But ministry runs in certainly my mom's side of the family for a number of generations. And I've been at Canyon Creek now for going on 10 years, and it's a very vibrant, spiritually alive church that I still feel very called to. So,
thank you
but that's enough, I think.
Well, thank you for sharing. I wonder if God was keeping you and Denise apart when
might be
maybe you were ready for her.
I definitely tell her, I definitely say, we wouldn't be together if you had known me then, which is probably true.
On the next pod, we're going to be talking about predestination. We'll save that for another day. But so let's get into today's subject matter. So we're going to talk about something we're all familiar with. If you've not been living under a rock for the last 2 years, talking points, the perils of talking points. We're going to talk a little bit about what they are, what they're intended to do, and really kind of how they're used. Now, talking points, interesting. I've never actually looked it up, but I found that talking points are defined as pre-established messages or formulas used in the field of political communication, sales, and commercial and or other forms of communication. The message is coordinated prior to any sort of event happening. So this is interesting, and what we know is that most organizations and even leaders in both the for-profit, non-for-profit world, secular, religious, have both struggled with and leveraged talking points for a variety of reasons. We're in a climate of extreme polarization at all levels, and it's really tempting to only speak from talking points when we recognize that everyone feels really strongly about a vast number of issues. And before we sort of get into the Q&A, I want to share a brief story that will help frame our conversation. Last summer when I was returning from sabbatical and the world had just sort of seemingly blew up, I received a call from a colleague, a very dear friend in ministry, who serves a congregation, a large congregation in Arkansas. And their session and staff were working on they felt a need to respond to in particular, the church's stance on an organization called Black Lives Matter in response to the killing of George Floyd. And their church was crafting a statement. And they wanted to have their statement, you know, sort of checked. And interestingly enough, I got a call from my friend. And for obvious reasons, they wanted to know, well, what I thought about the statement. And my friend said, you know, I feel kind of weird asking this. I don't even know if we should, right? It feels sort of wrong, but I just want to ask anyway, is this a good statement? Because we want this said. And this will be what we say moving forward. And while I think it's a good thing, I think there's challenges that all of us face when we talk about talking points. And so I guess what I want to ask you is, you know, what is your definition of a talking point when you hear that word?
So when I hear the word, my definition is not the one you found. My definition is that it's, in my opinion, something that should either open up further and deeper conversation, or be something that's recognized after an event. Mm-hmm. And we do utilize, it's not that we don't think of talking points that way, because we'll often say if some event happened where there was a dialogue in some way, you'll ask the question, well, what were the talking points? In other words, sum it up for me a little bit. What did you touch on?
Sure.
Is what we mean by that. Mm-hmm. And so I see it that way. I also see it as something that should be used as something to begin further conversation and deeper conversation. Mm-hmm. And we can get into the ins and outs of that, but that's kind of my short.
I like that
short definition.
That makes a ton of sense, because when you sort of look for a definition, it's kind of like, well, who's defining it,
right?
And from what chair do you sit? What perspective? What experience do you have?
The definition you gave, I looked it up too, and I did find some definitions out there that were similar to mine, alongside the ones you mentioned. And I haven't looked into the kind of the history of how we use and think of talking points emerge, but I wonder if the pre-selected statements and the predefined is a newer version. That I would guess that it is, but I could be wrong about that. But that it's evolved into that place that we use it and think of it as predetermined things, whereas maybe for a long period of time we didn't think of it that way.
Sure.
I feel like it's a new phenomenon, or at least used in the mainstream a lot more within the past decade or two than ever before, or at least in my lifetime.
Oh, sure. I mean, one of the places where you could see that more than anything, if we remember our, you know, the election season, and you watch, you know, if you watch any number of debates, I mean, everybody literally is saying the same exact thing in a different way. And sometimes they're not even trying to say it before, they're literally saying the same thing. They're asked a question and then they answer it but that wasn't even really what,
right.
You didn't even answer the question.
Yeah. The way we use it, I mean, we use them to, the way we use talking points is what I find troubling or of concern, because they're used to shut down conversation. That tends to be how they're used. Mm. And slogans are often used that way. They kind of become their own talking points, whether it's Make America Great Again or Build Back Better, which are the two most recent presidential slogans for their campaigns, yep. right?
Yeah.
And they kind of, the way they're used is to shut down rather than explore what you're even talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't have a context for those two statements,
right.
if I had zero personalities to attach to them, if we had just out of the blue kind of brought those two statements, to me, they would sound so similar
right.
that I would not be able to decipher a whole lot between the two at face value. They both sound like they're doing the same thing. And yet when you have the context we have to them, they're polar opposites because we've attached them to, they're attached to personalities and groups behind those personalities and momentum. So it's really kind of, that's a troubling, but at one level fascinating.
Sure.
But also a concerning because both of those statements sound positive in their intent.
Sure, absolutely.
And yet, by the nature of where we are, one has to be completely wrong and one has to be completely right.
That's the way.
Depending on which one you get behind.
Well, you just completely messed up my next question because my next question.
That's why I'm here.
And the list is, are talking points good or bad? But if you think about it, right, like, what you just said, it's really in the manner in which they're used.
Yeah.
So for example, in my neighborhood, there was a point in the neighborhood where one of our neighbors, pretty big backyard, and the community sidewalk runs through the development. There's a golf course and it's right on the golf course. So it's a really long backyard. And along the little brick wall, they started, when the pandemic started, a rock message garden. And so you could tell it was started by children, and you know the rocks. There was like three of them, and so we walk and run, and we ride our scooters. And so, literally by each day, people would come by and add a rock to it. And the messages started. It was just like, "We'll get through this," smiley face. "Let's do this together," smiley face. And the colors were pink and purple and light blues. And then after about 3 months, as we got into the fall, then the one rock gets put there, and it's those slogans that one of the slogans we just named. And then the rest of the rocks for the next 7 months were retorts to the rock previous. And so something that started so innocent in terms of trying to bring people together, context was lost because of messaging on one particular rock. And it ended up going beyond the house. So it's now like this 25-yard long rock string. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And they got better towards the end.
Yeah.
But I think that speaks to what there was nothing inherently wrong with the idea behind the rock garden, right? But somewhere the message was lost. I don't know if that's sort of the same thing.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think of what talking points have done is, I've said this in here at Canyon Creek once or twice. Talking points have become the mechanism for oversimplifying basically who we are and taking the complexity, deceiving us into taking the complexity out of what existence is all about.
Sure.
And being human is all about. And so it oversimplifies it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just create these talking points as conversation enders rather than conversation beginners. Mm. Or the organic sense of it, which is, where was the energy? What was the energy around as you gathered to talk about, you know, some communal issues? What was the energy around? Well, that's a talking point that kind of grew out of the conversation rather than was dictated to the conversation with a planned agenda.
Right.
And because of where we are, the dictation of a planned agenda, almost at the outset,
creates an either or situation. Mm-hmm. And to me, and nothing wrong with that, as far as being one way to look at things. I wrote down to bring to this, because I was thinking about, you know, talking points. I brought a quote that I've read a decent amount of Parker Palmer. He's kind of a spiritual voice,
yeah.
Certainly among pastors. And he talks about in terms of wholeness, he talks about not just looking at life through the lens of either or, but learning to look at the paradoxical nature of life as both and. And it's both. It's not, this is not trying to create another division of, well, if you think either or, then you're wrong. You have to think both and. It's, you do both. And there are things that are either or. But the inner life, as he puts it, involves a much greater amount of both and. It's being able, as what he would say is, and I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget it. He would say the key to personal wholeness, and I would say communal wholeness, depends on the ability to embrace one's self-contradictions.
Mm.
And what talking points do is, I think, is they split who you are into only one facet, and you deny, leave, ignore the other facets of who you are.
Okay.
And that's what talking points do. That to me is the danger of them.
Okay. So that leads me to another question. So I'm fascinated in the different roles within a congregation that we all play, right? Whether it's lay leadership, pastoral leadership, staff leadership. And this is something I'm just genuinely curious about. As a senior pastor, you know, your role is unique. You know, there are two associate pastors. There are multiple ruling elders. There are other elders, but there's really only one senior pastor. So in your role, are you ever tempted to use talking points as a way to either to build consensus, unity, those are two different things, or to protect, right? Have you ever used them or been tempted to, and not to mean that temptation is a bad thing in this sense, but do you feel the sense sometimes, depending on the issue, to use those?
Yeah. It's funny because where my mind immediately went when you asked that is into a political realm, not necessarily politics in the way of governmental politics,
sure.
but politics in the way of groups and how they work
yes.
together.
Yep. Yep.
Which is also part of governmental politics, because that's the mechanism for how our country is and works together shows
sure.
up in our governmental politics.
Sure, sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But within the church, the same politics of meaning how we are together and how we work together are true, because that's true of community existence. That's where I think it shows up. So it's not surprising that you see a lot of talking points in political gatherings of governmental or campaigning.
Sure.
So yes is my answer. And there have been times the capital campaign that this church is in, we had certain talking points that we used, and it's used to kind of keep a cohesiveness to the campaign, but it's not the end of that's the challenge.
Right.
So yeah, I do feel both tempted and aware that talking points are necessary and good. I think, but then that can't be the whole story. And what happens in the governmental political realm is it often becomes the whole story. And that's, and everybody, I think that's kind of what the challenge is. And the news really just jumps onto that.
Yes.
and helps it be the end of the story. Even though it seems to be under the guise of wanting to know more, it rarely ever gets, because you've already divided.
Yeah.
And because politically, at least in the governmental side of things, we almost walk in so divided, it's really hard to let go of it. Within the church and within smaller communities like churches, that piece of it, if you're talking about where the church is going, or what an endeavor that the church is in, you don't have that at that walking in divided as much.
Mm-hmm.
You do if you're doing something that's new that you know is controversial.
Sure.
But if you're, you know, if you're doing a capital campaign to pay off debt or fix the building or do some missional endeavor,
right,
you're pretty united on, you know, the majority of the community is already united on it. So the talking points serve a purpose that is helpful to keep the momentum going. It's when we are divided that talking points become a rallying cry. And it's not the talking points. Again, it's how we use them. It's who we are. It's a reflection of who we are. So it's not, you know, they're like money. They're not inherently good or bad. It's how we use them.
Sure. So what you've done is...
But
is,
yes, I feel tempted.
Yeah.
And but I also acknowledge that that's... I'm always uncomfortable with them, even when I know they're necessary.
Yeah.
It feels somehow inauthentic.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it's not.
Right.
It just doesn't feel genuine because it doesn't allow for flexibility of personality. That so I kind of get a bleh in my mouth, you know, even though I know they're helpful.
Right.
And I'm all for it. I get it. But it's a struggle for me. It is.
So what you've done is you've deconstructed the idea that talking points are an either or, more as a both and, right? You've affirmed.
Right. I think that's,
yeah,
that's how I would try to pull it in as a,
yeah,
they serve a purpose, but they are not the purpose to be served.
It reminds me, gosh, that reminds me of the sermon that was preached at my ordination service. And the pastor who preached the sermon looked directly at me. When he said this, he was not looking at the guy. He literally turned and looked at me.
Well, at least you were looking at him to know he looked at
you.
Yeah,
I was paying attention because I knew it was coming. You could hear it. And he looked at me and said, most of your ministry, if not all, as much as people will try to pull you, as much as the world, even your own congregation, will try to pull you into conversations of black and white, either or, you will find that most of your ministry and the faithfulness of your ministry will be lived in how you deal with the gray.
Yeah.
And most
Absolutely.
Of what determines the faithfulness of your ministry, he would never use the word success. He would say, well, what would determine the faithfulness of your ministry is those moments when you're operating that way between you and another person or between you and two other people.
Yeah.
When no one's watching.
Yeah.
And I just never, you know, because I'm like, no, we're, you know, it's like in seminary, it's like, it's this. This is what you are. This is who you are. This is how you, this is how we do this. This is the way we do this. This is the way we respond. Yet one of the things I found is, you know, I had a toolbox of statements and talking and everything that I had in my toolbox when I went into my first call. And within the first 3 months, I realized none of them worked.
Yeah.
nothing right. that I had, and not to say that the education, it was extremely valuable and I use it every day, but it on face value, if the treasure chest of points that I had, it just didn't, I had to, it right. changed my whole perspective.
And you'd look back on that now, I would think, and go, totally understand why.
Right.
But at the time there was some baffled surprise.
Yes.
Or yes. whatever you want to put it.
Sure.
There. Because life at the in the end is contextual, and mm-hmm. The talking points want to convince us that it's not, or that's the temptation,
right?
That it leads us away from life as fully contextual, which is why You could, I mean, like you can develop, Eugene Peterson used to talk about this all the time. He'd say, if I was going to move churches to the, from the Presbyterian church I serve to the Methodist church right next door, I might as well move across the world. Because that's, he was, his reasoning was, life is so contextual.
Right.
That even a group next to a group living in the same town, as if you're going to walk in and serve them faithfully,
right,
you are relearning from ground zero.
Mm-hmm.
It might as well be on the other side of the planet. I mean, it might as well be on Australia. It does, you know, it spiritually, in the sense of who we are and how we live, that's how contextualized life is and why it's so complex and why we really struggle with that. And so what we want is, and what Talking Points, I think, do, what they serve, at least for our comfort, we want to be told. We want to just tell me the three things. I don't want to figure it out. But it's in the figuring it out that the meaningfulness of our own life is often experienced and discovered. It's when we realize we're fully alive, and as you might put it, is in figuring it out. But we want to be told, and Talking Points tell us, and we go, okay, I don't have to care anymore. Even though that's, you know,
right,
not everything I just said isn't fully true, but it that's the feeling we get. Oh, okay. Hmm. It's the that's the answer. I don't have to do anything.
That's what, because
you took your tools, you didn't have to do anything. It's right. You didn't walk into it going, if I take these tools, I won't have to do anything. It wasn't that,
right?
But it just was. And you realize, well, we all realize, especially when we start out in ministry, it's,
yeah,
that same lesson that you'd never learn until you do it.
Yeah, well, it's like the realization that hits you, right? You know, one of my favorite, we call it lines, but for the sake of the podcast, call it a talking point, you know, from our, you know, the Presbyterian Directory for Worship. I went out into ministry with that, you know, that all time, space, and matter is hallowed by God. And then, yeah, take that into a group of people that have been worshiping one way for a certain amount of years.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's their context. Sounds great. But there's a reality, right?
Yeah,
that exists.
To me, the thing with I really struggle with Talking Points, in particularly in the spiritual sense, is the risk of them removing our desire and our motivation to look deeper into ourselves and to wrestle with how we really feel about things. Because if we fall in line with a certain set of talking points, so to speak, especially politically, then we dismiss other areas of who we are, and aren't fully honest with ourselves. We're only a partial person.
Right.
That's the temptation. That's not a fundamental truth. It's a temptation.
Right.
Which you have to be careful when you talk like that, because it sounds like I'm saying an either or.
Right.
And I'm trying not to, because I don't believe that this, in this sense, that either or is completely helpful.
Sure.
Either or is helpful in a lot of ways, in very practical ways. But I think spiritually, more paradoxical thinking is a much more helpful thing. It's like, I don't know why, but I think of my daughter, when she was really little, my oldest, and we went to Build-A-Bear.
Build-A-Bear.
We went to Child Temptation Mecca.
Yep.
And she wanted a Build-A-Bear. And we looked at the bill. She knew what she wanted, boy. And I said, well, and she wanted it right then. And she wanted to spend all her money on it. It was her money that she had saved. It was not my money. And I said, let's do this. Let's walk around for a little bit. And in 20 minutes, 30 minutes, if you still really want it, we'll go back. Well, of course, we got away from it. And before 30 minutes went by, she started saying, huh? And I said, what? What are you saying, huh, for? I don't think I want that anymore. And I, of course, looked at her and said, and this is a, you know, a talking point of sorts.
Sure.
I said, that is your experience of delayed gratification and instant gratification. You don't have to have it right then. And, you know, we use those phrases everywhere, instant gratification, delayed gratification. But unless we have the experience around it, and that's what I'm getting at.
Right.
A talking point is meant to have an experience around it that's more full and whole. And that's what we need to point to, not what the phrase is. The phrase is something that that often emerges,
right?
Not from the outset.
Mm.
I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying.
It strikes me as whenever I welcome, or even we started the podcast, you know, we start the podcast. I mean, the start of the podcast is you could argue it's a talking point, you know, our mission, you know, I say the same thing every time, to build relationships wherever we go.
Right.
Anytime I'm in front of someone, in a fashion where I am either, you know, speaking of or about the church in an official capacity, I always find a way to say that. And I don't think anything's wrong with that. The challenge, however, is, what does that mean?
Right.
And in my own context, in the church's context, and in the context of each individual member, we are very much a collective. We are a community comprised of individuals.
Right.
We forget that sometimes when we say, you know,
right,
community. And so, I guess my question would be, I'm gonna put you on the spot a little bit here, tell me about some of your, you know, do you have any favorite talking points? Do you have any talking points that you have heard that just drive you nuts? I have one, so I'll help you. So to give you a chance to think, you know, one of the ones I've always run into is, we are Reformed. I get that one. Like, yeah, and typically it's always, whenever that, it's never really used, like if it's everyone's in agreement or every, you know, it's like a thing, but it's like whenever you're getting ready to like push out a little bit, it's always used then. It's like, well, we are.
I think Reformed. I've used that with you maybe before. Anyway, go ahead.
Maybe not. Yeah. My last always, I mean, all, yeah, it's just like, you know, well, we are Reformed. Well, yeah, but it's a reminder, right? It's kind of what we do, right? That's one of the ones that I just, when I hear it, I just go, oh, I know we are. I'm just saying, you know, or another one, you know, like when we say, you know, we're a community. We are a community. It's a statement of fact. Right. It is, but I think the challenge, and this goes back to your conversation about context, is we are a community made up of individuals. There's no such thing as a community without a group of individuals choosing to be together and be considered a community. Right. And so sometimes I feel like when that statement is used, it sort of generalizes everyone. And yes, it's true. I think it's a strong statement. So I don't think it's a good or bad talking point. I just think it's one that I've heard. So I don't say I don't like it or don't. It's an example. So what are some that you've kind of heard? Are there any that you really love? Or there are some that just get
on
your
nerves? I'm trying to think of some that I really love. I know they're out there.
Yeah.
Like anything, it's easier to remember ones that have a negative. Because that's what you sticks to you more.
Right.
Which is always part of our challenge, right?
Yeah.
But the one that came to mind is one that I know one of your mentors in seminary also did not like, is when people say things like, well, God said it, so that settles it. And that's a talking point of sorts, because it's kind of a line that's used to supposedly reveal all kinds of things. And of course, the thing with talking points is that immediately sends me into that's my struggle with talking points. I always, no matter what it is, even if I love it, I often will want to disprove it. You know, because yeah. I just don't, it's so oversimplified.
Mm.
And I know for a fact that, you know, I read a whole diatribe from Tom, your
yes.
you know, friend of mine, friend of yours, about how, you know, he almost wants to look at a person that says God said it, that settles it, and say, how much of the Bible have you read?
Mm.
Because the Bible I read, God says it, and it unsettles it. If I were to create an opposite phrase, and it just shows that he's trying to say there is a both and with that kind of response. And the God said it that settles it wants to create an either or.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the tension.
Right.
And a spiritual life does live within the tension.
Right.
So that's one that just drives me crazy. Or, you know, and the other challenge with talking points is you is it a talking point or is it just a phrase that you don't like?
Exactly.
But that's biblical is another one that drives me crazy.
Mm.
Because that's supposed to shut something down, or that's not biblical.
Either it's biblical one, or it's not.
Neither one. It's the intent is to shut down conversation, and it to me is not. That's not the point. So I don't like those.
That's a good one.
You know,
it's biblical.
Yeah, it's biblical. I think I wrote another. Let's see. Well, I wrote some down just because since we were talking about it. You know, the church is dying, and that one, you know, it takes you to a place where conversation struggles instead of opening up conversation. So, you know, I just want to go, well, I'm going to counter that.
Yeah.
It really is hard. It is very difficult to try to enter a full conversation around something when it's led with a divisive statement that's often a talking point. It's often a phrase that's overused.
Well, it goes back to what you said about context. The church is dying.
Right.
Well, you could argue that certain, you know, we actually talked about this in a previous pod, where, you know, the data is staggering as far as post-Christendom in the United States of America.
Right.
However, I remember a few years ago, took a group of senior high youth to Peru. And we went for the purpose of helping to complete a seminary. And little did I know, I never knew, this was before I knew I was coming to Texas. It was, we partnered with First Presbyterian Church of Bryan, Texas.
Right. That's by happenstance the church my wife grew up in.
Wow. Wow. And so I had never, and so we met a couple of their elders came.
Yeah.
And so we partnered. They provided a lot of the material goods as far as money. We provided some material goods in the way of tools, but not as much financially as they did. But we provided a lot of the labor. Had a big group, and we went there. And what was interesting is you could see we had for our young people to hear, because all they hear is the church is dying. And young people, you are the future. That's another talking point, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Like that, don't get me started on that one. Right. That just drives me nuts. But no, you're right. The now. But anyway, it drives me nuts. But it was interesting.
But see how easily it just makes us want to counter it. And
yeah,
so we're already in this kind of either-or place,
right,
instead of saying they're, both of those things are true.
Right, absolutely. And to see their faces, that's all they hear. And then to have conversations with them, whether it's evening devotional or whatever, and you see all these different presbyteries in Peru. There's presbyteries. All these different representatives from different presbyteries in Peru that are coming by car, that are coming... some are getting their own car, some are getting rides, and others were even coming up the river from the village,
right,
to help build. And you've got right, all these 100 people,
right,
half of whom don't even speak the same language. You've got two translators for like 100 people.
Yeah.
And yet there's this community existing with nods and gestures and things. Everybody understands each other. We're there to do the same thing, but they hear. And so the pastor who is Pastor Leopoldo, who is the head of this particular seminary in Sequani, says the challenge is that we have more churches happening in these villages and in the mountains. We have more churches than pastors that can fill the churches.
Right.
So they're building, you know, the church I was at was responsible for building not only one, but two. I was there 5 years. And in 10 years, they had helped build two.
Yeah.
And so that's how fast, well, the church is dying. It's context. Well, from our, it might look that way.
Right.
But in another part of the world, churches are happening faster than pastors and they have to fill them.
Right.
So again, it's
totally.
And they're Presbyterian. It's context.
Right. It is. It's right. Totally context.
Yeah.
Another one that I thought I'd mention, since it's a highly politicized phrase and talking point, defund the police.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
And that one, you to me, just by saying it right, it sets, it immediately is divided. What is Andy going to say next?
Yep.
And that it's, we're immediately put in our sides when the whole underlying thing is about how do we as a country want to be policed. Mm-hmm. To me is the actual question. Right. How do we
mm-hmm.
manage that together?
Right.
Instead of defund the police, which is it's a talking point.
Right.
And when you talk about when you look online, all you got to say is defund the police on a social media and we're off to the races.
Yep.
And when you actually start to talk to someone who is on the side of being in favor of defunding the police, when you get into what do you really mean, it has a lot of similarities to someone who is saying don't defund the police. When you get to the, well, how do you want to be policed?
Yep.
Because I don't think anyone is saying, well, there are some, but I don't think by and large anyone is saying, let's do anarchy.
Right.
If you want to go defund the police, you want to say, so are you wanting anarchy?
Right.
Well, no. And so what do you mean? And so you're trying to get to the place where we actually have a lot of commonality.
Mm-hmm.
And the differences are more nuanced. But what a talking point like that does is it so vastly puts us back in our polarized places that we can't talk. It removes conversation, doesn't add to it.
Yeah.
And it's not because of the talking points, because we're already predispositioned for that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to rework on language that intentionally moves us out of being so far apart, because
right.
we're really not at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah.
Even if we disagree big time on some things, when you get down to where the rubber hits the road,
sure,
there's overlap.
Absolutely.
And that's the what talking points have, particularly ones that are set and listed and you stick to the talking points.
No matter
that's
what.
That's advice.
Right.
I mean, that's advice we give.
Yes.
Do not expand on what you're saying. Stick to the talking points.
Yep.
And it removes, you're not trying to move a congregation through a capital campaign, you're actually trying to get a message across that has a deeper meaning.
Right.
And if that's the case,
mm-hmm.
capital campaign in a church, it's very shallow, meaning as on face value, it's shallow. We have something we're trying to accomplish together.
Right.
And our spiritual life is affected by that, but this is the task. And so talking points help. They help us move through this kind of project.
Right.
And the deeper stuff is our ongoing life together. The campaign is a reflection of our ongoing life together, not the other way around. And that's where in politics and political discussions, it's sadly the other way around.
Yeah.
Instead of
our communal life as a country or as a is informing this. Instead, we gravitate to the talking points that take us actually out of our true communal life together. And that's us. That's us doing that. It's nothing to do with the talking points. That's just the mechanism.
So it's almost like the even the word talking points doesn't make sense because it doesn't invite conversation. It doesn't invite talking.
It's actually shuts it down. It's supposed to, I think, right. But it doesn't.
It does the reverse.
It doesn't.
It's almost like, it's...
And we're so... I mean, this is where we're so predispositioned to it. If we were to get together, let's say we pull together a community meeting of whoever wants to come in Dallas, and
sure,
the point of the meeting is that question: how do we want to be policed? We'll bring our talking points. We are predispositioned already,
yep,
to be in our
camps, yes,
because and talking points have solidified that. It's not, it's a very tough thing. It is not an easy solution.
Right.
You know, barring God's divine intervention.
Right.
It is.
Well, it's
a tough gig.
Well, it is because last night I got to be a part of, assisting, on behalf of some other colleagues in Grace Presbytery. And I'm thankful for our group, our whole, as a collective, for the work that we're seeking to do, and just making an impact in this city and around the churches we serve. But I got a chance to participate in worship, with many of the migrant teens who are at the K. Bailey Hutchinson Convention Center
last night,
and one of the things that the leader who got us together was saying was a talking point. And it almost felt, and so as we're preparing to go down there, you wonder, what in the world am I supposed to say?
To them.
To them.
Yeah.
And the journey that they've experienced, I mean, you walk in, it is very hard to describe. It's one of those things, you recently said in a sermon, once you see something, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where I just didn't sleep last night because you cannot unsee what you saw. And you're already thinking when you're going down, when you're driving down there, you're already thinking like, what am I going to say beyond what's in the worship service? What am I going to say? Because afterwards, because we served communion and we know there's a prayer card activity that we did. And so what do I say? I wasn't worried about the worship service. Even though I was doing the Lord's Prayer in Spanish, I was saying that thing over and over again to make sure I got it right. What made me most nervous is what would I have to say? And we had enough Spanish speakers where it didn't have anything to do with the language barrier. It was, what do I say? And so our leader says simply, I've said the same thing each and every day to every single person. And it's fuerza, which is strong. Be strong. And cuídate, which is take care. Say those things when you serve, when we say the communion liturgy. But after that, when it's time to depart, when it's time to do, I said the same thing every single time. And when I'm first hearing that, I'm thinking like, well, shouldn't I say more? Because that in a sense, those are talking points.
Right.
But it's the best thing we could have said.
Yeah. It's a good use of...
Yeah.
It's a good use.
Right. Right. And so, again, it's almost like the phrase, talking points almost needs to be disarmed. And
yeah,
we have to be the ones that disarm it. And how we deal with it. It's like if anyone, you mentioned several talking points. What's interesting is you can always tell when someone's thinking about using a talking point. or they're getting ready to use one, and it's before having to say something difficult, right? Or something that they know might cause some level of discomfort. And I always try to disarm it immediately, typically when someone is getting ready to say something. And for me, and this pod's not about that, but where I typically get the greatest amount of talking points when it comes to an issue of race, when someone's asked me something. And you can tell it's what they're asking is not really what they want to ask, because one, they don't want to either offend, or they may not know, or don't want to irritate, whatever it is, or don't want to be perceived a certain way. I don't know. I'm sure that all goes into that. But it's typically like a talking point. I want to say, one, we're family by virtue of us being in relationship with each other. So one, we're family. Just say it and we'll work it out, you know? And so what you were kind of saying is, I just sometimes wish that we, you know, we do it to ourselves when we don't want to deal with, you know, putting something how we really feel out there, because it's in that expansion that word stuck to me. I wrote it down when you say to expand on it.
Yeah.
It's in the expansion,
right,
that we actually gain perspective.
Yeah.
But we stay away from the expansion because we're afraid of what that expansion might look like.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, if we entertain expansion, then it could prove us wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we're worried about being wrong.
Right.
We don't like being wrong.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about, that's the danger of talking points.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about right and wrong.
It's not. It's not.
It's about, what are you learning about the other?
Right.
And it may teach you something about yourself. You may realize that you're not actually fully in whatever camp you thought you were in. You know, that you just may realize that you're actually a bigger person than that.
Yep.
Than being in one little place. And that's not to say that you may come away with a discovery that, no, you really are in this place.
Right.
That also has allowed you to realize a bigger self. That's not diminished either.
Right.
So in that sense, when you're talking whole person, neither, it is both and.
Sure.
And more so than either or, in that sense. Either or has a different, has a good place in other areas of life. But when it comes to self,
mm-hmm.
and who you are, entertaining both and is key. And that's where talking points should fall short.
Mm-hmm.
But they have their place.
They do. And maybe it's not a question of whether or not talking points are good or bad, or like the title of the episode. It's an unofficial title. There's no place where we have to log our official titles for a podcast, but the title when we were thinking of this episode was The Perils of Talking Points. Maybe we rethink, maybe talking points are not necessarily good or bad. It's how they're used and for what purpose. Are they used to promote conversation? Are they used to promote
or shut it down?
Deeper thinking? Or is it used to put up a brick wall that the other person cannot possibly climb over? And I'm reminded of that when you say that's biblical. That to me is the brick wall. It's like, well, so that means we can't talk about it anymore. Who can talk against the Bible?
Right.
Who can do that?
Right. It's like and the Bible is so full of its own contradictions within itself. I mean, it's where you're just like, so what's biblical? Where are we? It's really crazy.
Yeah.
Another quote I thought of that I'd written down was another one that Palmer, he refers to a physicist who said, the opposite of a correct statement is an incorrect one, either or, but the opposite of a profound truth may be another profound truth. And that's kind of the difference I'm getting at. Though that's either or in both and in a nutshell. There are things where, you know, a correct statement is this light switch behind me turns the light off and on.
Right.
It's incorrect to say this light switch doesn't turn the light off and on. That's incorrect. It is either or.
Right.
It either does or it doesn't.
Right.
And we know it does.
Right.
So if you think it doesn't, then you're wrong.
Right.
And profound truth has to do more with, you know, what do you experience when you flip this light switch? Tell me about your experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that may reveal a profound truth of experience. And someone else may come in and you say the same thing. What's your experience around switching this light switch on and off? And they tell you, and those are completely different experiences. And yet those each in their own way have a profound meaning. That's the both and.
Well, and that makes complete and total sense if we weren't living in the world we live in now. So, I mean, you literally, I mean, it's almost so bad right now where somebody, for the sake of either wanting to argue or just being difficult, could say, well, no, that light switch, that's how it feels.
Sure.
It could be, that's not what it is because that's not the way I see it. It's something as obvious as the light switch.
It's the world Jesus lived in.
Right.
And he was trying, his ministry in a lot of ways was so contextual. And the backlash was, you're healing on the Sabbath. You don't heal on the Sabbath.
Right.
And he pushed against that. He was speaking to, let's talk the context of within which this happened.
Mm.
And just got, you know, literally nailed for it.
Right. Right.
And so he's revealing that to be as important as the either or.
Mm. So it's interesting speaking of,
I think.
Well, and speaking because we, you know, when we think of the, well, tell me how you feel about this. When we think of the cross, we think of it as an, you know, one could argue, you know, the cross, it just went over this in a class, you know, I am the way, the truth, and the life, right? No right. one comes except by me.
Right.
You know, at face value, you can say that's a pretty intolerant statement. I mean, it's an either or.
Right.
You either come this way or you don't.
Right.
So one could say that the theology of the cross is one of either or.
Right.
But how do we reconcile that with the both and nature of Jesus's ministry?
It's a great question. I think that really my cop-out answer, my cop-out thought is that reveals the real tension of the mystery of Christ. And that's my cop-out answer. But at the same time, I have to, we all wrestle with that kind of thinking and using that scripture as a either or.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to fight myself on it in this way, saying, in the numerous times I've read the gospel stories,
and the
way in which he related to people, that is, he did not mean that as an either or. That's where I fall. I tend to back off and I say, I don't think he meant that as an either or. He meant it as even marching orders.
Right.
I think he meant it as a deepening of their relationship and of our relationship with Christ.
Sure.
And not to use it as a battering ram.
Mm-hmm.
And to move, to get away from either or.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an interpretation. That's my experience around it.
Mm.
Is the way I would put it. What's your experience around it, right?
Right.
I'd like to know.
Mm.
That, and then let's let our experience around it and honor our experience around it and let God do the rest. We don't have to walk out of this conversation with one of us being right and one of us being wrong.
Mm.
It's the whole question of, you know, when two people are arguing over Jesus,
mm-hmm.
my thought is, Y'all are both trying to follow Jesus. What's the problem?
Right.
In your own way, you are. What's the problem? Hmm. And the problem is we want to be right.
Yeah.
And some of that means somehow someone else has to be wrong.
Right.
That quote is trying that I mentioned is trying to get at, you can both be right in your own way.
Mm-hmm.
Both can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
I seem to have heard that recently from a pastor that I know sitting in front of me.
Hmm. Well, so here's another put you on the spot. I want to know what you would have done as a pastor. So I remember I had been ordained about a month and a half. And I was in a previous call, I was in charge of managing building and outside community use. And it sticks with me to this day. There is not probably 2 weeks that goes by that I don't think about this decision. I am one that dwells on every little thing that I've done and decisions that I make. They yeah. never leave me. And so here it is. And it fits. I think it totally fits. So it was I got a call from an organization that was working with area churches in the Charlotte community. Are you familiar with the International Day of Peace? It's actually on
yes,
our
Yes, but
calendar.
I haven't seen... Yes, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. yeah.
They wanted to... The last church I served was an uptown, downtown church. Like, it was perfect. Every wedding, if you wanted a wedding, everybody wanted to use it. If it was a movie shoot, it was used. If it was a TV shoot, for anything, it was always used. Great location. And so whenever organizations want to meet, have like ecumenical type gatherings, that we would host a lot of them. And we were going to host. A previous staff person had committed us to doing it. And I got some details about the event, that there would be several different faith leaders from different faiths who would be on a panel that would lead. Anyone from the community could come, didn't matter what your particular religious background was. And everything was good up until about a week before the event, when I was supposed to be on the program and we were just getting ready to print it. And I raised a concern, because I had sent in the prayer that I was going to do. I was going to do the invocation, but I was told that, you know, not to make mention of the name Jesus, that it's an ecumenical event, to do a general prayer of invocation.
Right.
And my response to that was, and I wrestled with it, but not as much as I would have now. And I actually withdrew our church from consideration, and I debated this with the property team, and it's part of your call. You make the decision, we support you. And I never really talked to anyone about it after that, but I'm sure there were some that was like, oh, fine. And I know there was someone that didn't agree with the decision, a coworker. But I said, well, you know, we are a church that believes in... I said it better. I said it more pastoral. But basically what I said was, well, we are a Christian church. There's a cross hanging on the wall. And, you know, that's who I am. And so... I'm not going to not say that. And if I can't say that, it's probably not an event I'm comfortable mm-hmm. being at or sponsoring.
Yeah. So your question is, what would I have done?
What would you have done in that situation?
Well, that is a great question. So there are a lot of parts to that that I would probably need more info on.
Sure.
And I would need my experience of being there.
Yeah.
I would probably be fine with that for a one-time event. I would, if we were going to continue it on an ongoing basis, then I would start to, I would, part of my conversation would be to how do we more fully represent ourselves. But for a one-time event, I would have probably been okay.
And I can say that now.
Yeah.
Looking back, I was saying, like, well, that was just the wrong
But I'm also not one that has to splatter Jesus's name all over everything. I believe in the sovereignty of God. So Jesus is there.
Whether or not we name him
whether
or not,
I say his name or
he's
not.
He's there. If you believe on the omnipotence, and omnipresence of God, right?
You just can't, never you can't know take how him out God of there. Operates. That's right. So I don't get as hung up as maybe similar to you, I used to. Mm-hmm. But if it's going to be an ongoing thing, you know, I would call that a misrepresentation of who I am if I was never allowed.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That is a different, but for a one-time event, I'd have been okay with it.
And just our conversation took me there. That was not part of, I thought about that with what you've been. Yeah. And again, it's like, it's around the 2 weeks when I think about that. And so it brought it up.
Yeah.
And it was just like, wow, you're talking to that. Cause I was operating from an either or.
Yeah.
Perspective when the situation.
Well, it pulls you into that place right away.
It didn't warn it. And what I failed to realize was that every single other person was charged the same way I was.
Right. You're holding that commonality.
We were all told to say God.
Yeah. And so that's okay.
But to where? And they didn't ask us to cover up the cross. They didn't ask us to put a sheet over it. Then has to take it down.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that would have been a problem. I mean,
that would have been an issue.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have flown.
Could you cover that up, please?
Yeah.
No.
Right. But wear your robe and your stole. The other leaders will wear what they would wear.
Yeah.
And so I just, again, that toolbox.
It takes a while to discover where you really sit with that stuff. Those pull you into those either feeling like it has to be either or, and it doesn't always. And that's if there's a point I'm wanting to make, it's that.
Well, I think that's a perfect point to make as we close out our pod this day. I want to thank you for being a part of this. It's fun to do. It's fun to hear. You know, we don't get a chance to do this, to take any of us in many lines of work. I wonder how different the world would be if two people would have the chance to talk to each other in a room behind a closed door for an hour.
Yeah.
How much a better place the world would be. And I thank you for that final point when you say it doesn't have to be either or, that it can be both. And that's interesting how we close our pod. If you ever wonder, when you lead this, it's very clear that the Testament podcast is not about right answers. It's about the things that we gather along the way, part of the journey that form us and make us who we are. If you ever get into a situation where you're wondering what's the right thing or what's the wrong thing to do, always do what's most loving. And whenever you do what's most loving, you can't go wrong. Thank you for joining us on the pod. We'll talk to you next time. Take care.